podcast is sponsored by Damo Ingredients, who provide best-in-class functional ingredients such as starches, proteins, fibres and gums, to name but a few, into food manufacturers across the UK and Ireland.
I've worked with Damo on various projects for my own brand and with my clients, and what I love about working with them is their in-depth technical knowledge and their ability to apply that to the specific products that you're actually working on.
So they've become an extension to your own development team, supporting them with their knowledge from concept through to launch. To find out more, visit www.damo.com.
Welcome to the Oh For Food's Sake podcast, where we unwrap the joys and struggles of working in the food industry so you can thrive in what you do best while sustaining a rewarding and fulfilling career or business. We are your hosts, Lucy Wager, food industry consultant,
and Amy Wilkinson, food industry coach. We've worked in the food industry for the last 20 years, and we're here to share with you the benefit of our hindsight. Our podcast is for you to find new ways to cope with the daily struggles, but mostly to inspire you to work on what's not working to ultimately improve your career or business long term. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Oh For Food's Sake. Today we have a lovely guest with us, Jenny Beasley, who is a food industry HR coach. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Lucy.
So Jenny and I met through the power of LinkedIn, as ever, but actually both worked at Bakkavor at the same time, but didn't know each other. So it's one of those funny small worlds that we tend to have in Lincolnshire, where everybody, in fact, before we came on this call, we were just talking about other people that we knew. Everybody knows everybody or knows somebody that knows somebody. So we kind of knew each other existed, but didn't know each other. And Jenny contacted me because she was in the decision-making process of taking a similar leap to the leap that I took. And Jenny had worked in HR in the food industry for a long time and has set up on her own. But I'm going to hand over to Jenny for her to tell us a bit about yourself, Jenny. Tell us what you do. And as always, you know, you're a podcast listener as well. Yeah. Give us a bit of a potted history of your career.
Yeah. Okay. So I think I now help HR leaders in the food industry to look after themselves, create better boundaries, and be more confident and be able to look after themselves, stand up for what they actually want. I think I basically am trying to be what I needed 5 years ago, and I couldn't find and didn't know it, you know, maybe it existed, but if it did, I didn't know about it. And I think there's no HR for HR, and I think that it can be quite a lonely place at times. So that's what I sort of am aiming for now, to provide that. I mean, it's very confidential, so you have to be, you know, it's limiting who you can talk to. So I think you kind of need that person who is independent and not involved to talk to. So that's my thing, is to help support. And part of the thing I loved as part of the HR role was helping develop other people. So to carry that side on was important to me.
Yeah. So it's actually really similar to your reason as well for going into what you do, Amy, isn't it? It's really interesting. Yeah, it's really reflective.
Yeah, and it's similar. It's all the similar reasons, and I think me and Jenny know each other quite well now, and we've worked together, and I've been helping her a bit with getting her voice out there on LinkedIn and that sort of thing. But actually, there's so much of that using your own strengths and what you know you're good at, which is helping those other people and bringing that in. It's a scary leap to take, isn't it? Like, it's really, a really scary, really scary thing to do. Yeah. And I know a lot, you probably find the same, Jenny, a lot of people, particularly in like HR and L&D roles, will message me and be like, what's it like being a coach? I really want to be a coach, but I'm really scared that I'm going to be, because it's scary going into a self-employed and not having guaranteed income and all of that sort of stuff.
Absolutely.
But the other reason, like, so we're definitely, like, I'm doing my Amy get overexcited thing. The other thing I wanted to mention was, you know, a few weeks ago we've had somebody else, you know, Phil May, that at Greencore, because Jenny worked at Greencore as well, but you can tell us all about that. Yeah. He works in hygiene, and it's a forgotten part of the food industry. And I feel like HR is not forgotten, but it's actually really, you know, people are so central to the food industry, but actually as a function, we sort of think of them as an add-on. And
well, it's more taken for granted, isn't it? Yeah. It's not forgotten. It's just taken for granted. Yeah. It's like HR.
You're there, don't you, when you need
So start by telling us, so we'll get into all of that nitty gritty, because I really want to get into that, like, what are the difficulties in HR? Yeah. What would you like people to know? But start by telling us how you got into HR in the first place.
So I think most people will say they fell into it. I did actually see a careers talk and think, oh, that sounds interesting. And I did do did a summer working in the factory at Tinsley's. So I'm showing my age now. And thought, God, I'd rather be on that side of the table than packing in the factory. I was interested. So my first job, I was a payroll clerk for Railtrack, as was. And then kind of worked my way up through there. And then I did a little time in the civil service, which was a real eye-opener. It was very, signed the Official Secrets Act and very, very high-level stuff. And then I moved to Lincolnshire, and I was like, oh, what's got a lot of people in Lincolnshire? My dad worked for Geese, so I was like, oh, I'll apply to them. So that's how I kind of ended up in the food industry. And it was a massive culture shock. It is so different to the civil service and the railway, the pace and just the, like, yeah. I didn't know.
Could it be much more different, actually, could it really, going from that to,
couldn't. Like, I used to send things out in the civil service and get it back with red pens and decimal points on, and then I got to Geese and I was like, okay, this is very immigration's been, the police have been, and oh my goodness. So it was a massive, massive change for me. But I think you just learn so much. And I don't think when you're in HR in the food industry, you realise how much you kind of condense that experience, because so much happens in a short space of time. Mm. And when you're in those other sort of organisations, you know, people don't really get dismissed. They don't, those things, everything sort of drags out a long time. Things are quick in the food industry, and there's big challenges and you have to think on your feet. And I had to learn really quickly to just get on with it. Stop thinking it, because there isn't time.
Yeah, and I suppose there's a lot more people, you know, that factories are full of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very different sort of, you know, people are different and what they need are different. And yeah, it's, yeah, it was a real, real change. But I ended up being in that role, in different roles and being sort of promoted, but on that site for 13 years. So
was that the starting site?
Bourne.
Ah, okay, right, fine. I'm just saying that because I was on the Spalding site when it was used as well. And I'm sure I recognised you, because when Amy mentioned you, I was like, I'm sure I know her name, but we definitely never met. I don't recognise you, but I do recognise your name. It's that back of all thing, isn't it?
I think it is. I think it is. So, during my time there, then had sort of two maternity leaves, and I was probably one of the lucky and first people to be able to work part-time and do a job share and those sorts of things, because they were pretty unheard of in the food industry sort of going back 15 years ago. I was very fortunate to have a female boss that supported that.
And actually I know when in my time at Bakervor they were quite supportive of it wasn't like flexible working and stuff, but they when I went and I told them I had a chronic illness when I started, you know, they were quite forward thinking about that. And they were like, you're still going to get the job done. It doesn't matter, kind of thing. So you were pioneering it in being one of the part-timers in the part-timers. See, the way I said part-timers then, it sounded a bit negative, didn't it? But
flexible working. That was, you know, every time somebody new came in, we sort of had to justify our existence, and as a job share sort of worked double hard to make sure nobody else sort of suffered, because there was two of us sure that communication was doubled, so that nobody else had to double it, if that makes sense.
So actually, even so, were you 3 days a week each then? Overlap. So did you feel do you think you felt more pressure because I'm just thinking back to when I was 4 days, like, you know, it's, it ends up being 5 days in four, doesn't it? But it's almost like that pressure to prove that you can.
Yeah.
So you know you've got to hold on to that 3 days because you desperately want the other 2 days with your kids. But it almost puts more pressure on you to perform in those 3 days.
Absolutely. Yeah. You feel like you don't feel like you can have the chats and the downtime, you feel like you've got to be going all the time. And exactly that, in terms of always trying to justify your existence, always trying to make sure that you weren't letting any cracks show that, and so that anybody could say it wasn't working.
I'm
interested in job sharing because like people talk about job share, but what's it actually like doing a job share compared to being part-time in your role? Is it easier or is it hard? I think I don't know whether I would struggle with it because
you totally would because you're a control freak.
I'm a complete control freak. I'm rubbish at delegating. Not that you would delegate to the part-time, I suppose, but you'd have to make sure there must be an awful lot of communication going on.
There was, and there would be sort of double a handover email. I think the advantages were you had somebody else and we were good at different things. And there was a sort of a real lack of ego. It was like, oh, if either of us had made a mistake, the other one would back us, you know, you'd come and have each other's back.
Yeah.
It couldn't work if it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
But it is difficult because you don't know everything and you don't know if you don't know it or whether the other person knows it. So you feel a real responsibility to each other as well, I think. So it's hard in that regard, but it's handy to have. Because not very often you have somebody else who's exactly at the same level who you can stuff off. So massive advantages. And I think you do get a real sort of strength through it, but equally it's really hard for the reasons you said, because you always feel under time pressure and you don't know everything. And that's hard. And I think I'd got to the point by the time that sort of came to an end and I kind of was forced to go 4 days. I sort of thought, I can't do this without the job share partner. And I had lost some confidence through that. So it.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. So I think it's, and I also thought, and when it came to the role becoming redundant and moving on, it was like, I was completely convinced I'd never find a part-time job ever again in HR.
Yeah.
This is it. I'm going to have to work full-time and travel miles. And like literally within weeks I did. And that's when I went to Fresh Time and they supported the 4 days. And then I went sort of standalone head of HR role then in a private business, which is really different, really different to working for a Bacavor or a Green Course.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point that you make, Jenny. I don't know if you find this with one-to-one clients and stuff. I have a lot of clients that will be staying in a role. And I'm not saying that you were when you're at Bacavor, but I just see it with other, it's the same thought process of I've got all the flexibility here. Mm. I get this, I get that. I can't possibly leave or I can't change careers because I won't get those things because the family does matter and all of that stuff does matter. But we convince ourselves, it's like we fill in the gaps and decide before we've even like, looked whether or had the conversation whether the flexibility is
and people
be there.
Actually say things like, oh, I'm so lucky because I have this flexibility. Well you could spin it on its head and be like, well, actually they're really lucky that they've got you willing to do this job because of what you bring to the business. And it's interesting because I work with the other end of the spectrum, much smaller businesses, and we'll have conversations about like, well, you know, we're really tight on budget but we need this type of person, and I'm like, do you know what, this is an amazing role, it's really flexible, they can work from home, there's not many development jobs that allow that to happen, and those jobs are out there. But as you say, Amy, it's a case of like, it's almost like in the initial instances being brave enough to go and see what's out there.
And it's exactly what you said, Amy, that's exactly why I stayed so long, because I was terrified. But did I ever go and have a look and see what else there was?
I hope things are changing because I think more flexibility is coming through in job ads and stuff like that, whereas it does you'd worked in HR, you know, they in the past wouldn't have like publicly said that because, oh my God, we're going to set a precedent and then everybody's going to want part-time and it's going to cost the business a fortune. And
And
I whereas think actually people expect it.
Pandemic's helped massively with that, hasn't it, in terms of moving that sort of flexible work agenda on. So it's funny looking back to think how rare it was now, because now I think, I want some flexibility. Why wouldn't I? But you felt a bit awkward saying it.
So back to, so you were back at, you were at Fresh Thyme, and that was different because of the size of business. And-
so different. I think when you're on a site in a big company, you're sort of like, oh, I want to do this and I want to do my own thing and I don't want head office telling me what to do. And then you get on your own, you're like, oh my God,
I've got to do it all.
I know nothing. I've got nobody to go and ask. And you literally realise it's a totally different feeling. And it's amazing to be able to make those decisions, decide on those initiatives and move them forward. But equally, it's absolutely terrifying when you suddenly find you are it. You are.
It's kind of careful what you wish for. I wish I had more autonomy. Oh my God, I've got autonomy.
So I think it's, you know, it's a real double-edged sword. There's massive advantages to it and things run very, very differently sort of in a, and you know, that was owned by sort of one person at that time. And that's really different to working for a big organisation. But again, you learn an awful lot. Having gone from, I'm doing a job share, I don't know if I can even do this job without the other person, to, okay, I'm now the head of HR and I'm running the whole thing. It's a massive step change. But it, you know, and I think you've talked to Amy with confidence before, you don't ever have it until you've done it. And you learn really, really quickly when you've got no choice.
It's sort of like you just have to get on with it, don't you? There's a lot of that that goes on in the food industry, just getting on with it, isn't it? And then Fresh Thyme was bought out, weren't they? So then you went back to big business.
So then I was working for Greencore. So that was about 18 months in. So, and then...
So another big shift change. I'd stop myself saying shift change then, because I was thinking food industry shift change, but you know what I mean? A big change for you in terms of the structure. Because I know then at that point you had two bosses as well, didn't you? Which is another thing that happens for a lot of HR people.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the challenges sort of as we talk about that is, you know, the needs of the site and what's going on in that particular business and then what the overall HR agenda is. And although ultimately everybody wants the same thing, not they don't necessarily want them at the same time and in the same order. And you know, when I think back to sort of, you know, trying to get people to do an employee survey, which was a group initiative, and we were in the middle of that labour shortage post-pandemic, and the factory were like, we haven't got any people, we can't give you, and we were kind of stood head-to-head in the factory saying, well, I need people to do the survey, I can't give you anybody. And it's really hard, because do we want to know what people think so we can do something about it? Yes. Do we want to do it when we're in the middle of a labour shortage and it's our peak? It doesn't work that well, but it's you have to kind of work around those things when you're part of a bigger business, because you can't do it at a time to suit everybody. But you can you can be the middleman a little bit. You get quite a lot of pressure from the site. What do you think you're doing trying to take people out when we're up against it? Versus, well, have you only got 40% completed? What are you doing? I think that is something that HR people navigate, and I suppose other functions do as well. But you don't necessarily see it from the outside.
But I think the difference for HR is, in that sort of scenario, you're doing something to try and make things better for the business.
Yeah.
But it's not having an immediate impact.
And that's
so that's the problem. So it's like everybody's feeling like you're the problem, because you want us to fill this form out. Well, why haven't you filled the form out? And it's like, you know, they're firefighting in the factory and. Yes, you're in a really.
And I think that's
position.
The case for all support functions, isn't it? In a manufacturing business, manufacturing it comes first, and but we're all, you know, here in the support functions trying to make things better and create positive change.
Yeah,
but actually, there's a lot of short term. We've got to get the orders out the door.
Yeah, and that's the constant balance, isn't it? And the constant. I think that's the thing that makes it tricky. For support functions is that balance, because the orders are so short, aren't they? Especially in the sorts of places I work with.
Yeah, chilled. Yeah. So tell us a bit more then about the challenges. So, you know, our audience on the podcast is people across the food industry.
Yeah.
And we always want to help other people understand what the challenges are in specific departments. So talk to us about the challenges that HR specifically come up against.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it leads on from what we were just talking about in terms of that, you know, you're trying to do stuff for the future and you're trying to do things that set things up well for the future, but they aren't always immediate or urgent. I think that is the basis of a lot of it. I think the other thing is that who does what between the line manager and the individual. And, you know, I think probably the thing that frustrates HR people so much is when people kind of try and give their management responsibilities to HR. And
I don't want to deal with this problem. Oh, we'll get HR to do it.
HR told me that I had to do this, so I don't agree with it, mate. But, you know, HR said. And, you know, that, I suppose, that sort of not taking ownership and not being the manager, that's really quite hard because, you know, clearly you can't manage 800 people. The HR people can't line manage 800 people. The manager needs to do it. So I think that's probably the biggest challenge in terms of moving things on from a people management point of view, because HR
is that a lack of understanding from the managers, or is it shifting responsibility, or is it a mixture of both? Like, is it an education piece?
I think it might be a mixture of both, and I've always tried to do the education piece as part of it. I think some of it's fear. I mean, some of these conversations are flipping awkward, aren't they? You know, it's awkward. People get upset. It's the things that are, you know, you're talking about either performance or something that's going on in their lives or their attendance or their health. It's, you know, it's not conversations that people feel comfortable with. So I think sometimes it's just like, I was having that conversation because it's a bit awkward and I don't want to put my foot in it, I think is the other.
There's a fear as well, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, I think it is some of that. And I think people are really busy as well, aren't they? You know, you give TNA systems or reporting systems, but people would rather you gave them the report or told them what needs doing than have to go and look for it. And I think there's a bit of human nature in there as well. We kind of all do that to an extent with stuff we're not comfortable with.
Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, we go into certain functions because we want to do certain things, and it might be, you know, somebody has that perception, oh, I'm not a people person, that's what HR are for. And it's like, we all have to be people at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And I think that's a big challenge as you go through your career as well, in terms of when you know, if you start out as sort of HR admin and stuff, you kind of get your kudos and your relationships through doing stuff for people and making their life easier. And as you progress up, you don't have that, and you can't do that indefinitely, otherwise you just put yourself into the ground. And also you don't help managers. You know, what do they do at night when you're not there, or what do they do on a Saturday? If you always do it for them, you're not actually helping. You feel like you're helping, but you're not. You have to do the helping people to become self-sufficient if you want them ultimately to be able to do the job, whether you're there or not. And that's a real balance, because it sometimes feels like you're just telling people to, you know, pushing people back and asking them to go and do it themselves. And people can get quite upset with that, like, why don't HR do it? But obviously it doesn't really help. It doesn't help the employees and it doesn't help the business, but it helps very short term. It helps today.
Yeah, I'm almost likening it in my head to parenting. You know, it's easier to do stuff for your kids, isn't it? Like, that they've got to learn.
You can do it better as well.
But they need to be able to get dressed for school.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm laughing at myself as I was this morning wrestling a 5-year-old trying to get her socks on.
Yeah, I'm laughing because in our year three, my daughter's going into year three, so she's 7 going on 8. And in the year three talk with the new teacher, she was like, it's really important to try and make sure that your children are as independent as possible, because they're like getting to that point where they need to be able to do stuff by themselves at school. And I still do things like put my daughter's socks on for her because she's just lazy, basically.
So there's parenting lessons in it, but it's the same principles, isn't it? You've got to empower people to do. Yeah. So what else do you find really challenging in HR?
I think especially in businesses where, you know, money's tight, isn't it? You don't have facilities managers and all of that sort of stuff in a lot of food businesses. So you'll kind of get, can you just do the vending? Can you just buy some Easter eggs? Can you just security? Can you?
Yeah. It's like the MPD. Can you just make the lunch thing?
Exactly like that. So I think that's difficult because there are limited resources within the team. And again, the stuff that's urgent and short term tends to go to the top of the pile. But ultimately, you've got to be doing the stuff that's going to be taking you forward in a sort of 3 months, 6 months, if you want to. So if you want to get, you know, thinking about sort of fairly recent work, getting appraisal systems in and getting those sort of things in, they take time and you have to take yourself out of the day to day. But I think, so I suppose, yeah, getting landed with all the crappy jobs that vaguely might have something to do with people. Most things do, actually.
Yeah.
Engineering, pretty much everything has something to do with people. So, you can end up with a load of stuff that really isn't your skill set and isn't really yours. And that can be frustrating. It can be frustrating to the team as well. So there's a bit of that. And I think there's that fine line with HR. I mean, I saw something about some article about less booze at work parties, and I thought, yes, get it. Because it's a bloody nightmare for HR people when, you know, you go to the do's. Are you part of the team? Do you get involved? How much of a good time do you have? Do you go home at 10 o'clock before it sort of all goes wrong?
God. And then, I've got visions of there'll be people listening. I won't say which company or whatever, but visions of it. Some very inappropriate behaviour at a sort of do, and like the next, within weeks, that person was no longer within the business.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're always treading that fine line between being part of the team, but, you know, you know things about people's futures that before they know. Yeah. You're always being careful what you say to who and trying to remember what as a secret, and so you end up playing dumb some of the time because it's safer, because you're carrying all this stuff around in your head. You know stuff about people's sort of personal circumstances that isn't common knowledge. So I think that's a real challenge. And also, you know, it's difficult. You get involved in people having to exit the business, maybe people you've worked alongside or been friends with, and
And I guess it's quite sometimes you have to do things that I guess, because you're sort of that interface between the business and the people.
Yeah.
There must be times in which you have to implement, you know, when you're going through consultations and stuff like that, things that you must have to implement that you actually don't agree with.
Yeah.
Personally. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. And that is hard because you ultimately have to do what the business has decided. And I suppose, especially if you haven't been brought in early on in the process and you are literally just implementing, that can be really difficult. Trying to find that balance between supporting people and doing the right thing, but also making sure those legal boxes are ticked. And
I always think it must be awful in the businesses that you see that are, you know, that are closing or getting, you know, like they've lost a massive contract, had to get loads of people, and they know that they're being kept on for now because they have to get rid of everybody else, but then they're going to be on the list themselves. Yeah. That must be just awful.
Yeah, I think
keep motivated.
Yeah, absolutely. And look after other people. And I think that's another challenge that people I work with face, is you're so busy looking after other people, and then you'll say to HR people, what's on, you know, when did you last do anything for yourself in terms of development? You might do everyone else's PDP, but anything for you. I mean, there was years I didn't do anything. And I think the habit of putting yourself to the bottom of the pile and looking after everyone else, you can go too far with that and not look after yourself, not keep yourself current. And it's, you know, I think you are expected to be engaged, be upbeat. You know, you don't want to go to HR and hear a load of moaning. So I've, for everyone else to moan, but that's not what you want or need or expect from your HR team. So you can't do that if you're on empty yourself. So
yeah, it's almost like you've got to have this happy mask on when actually underneath it you're thinking, I'm with you, this is a nightmare.
It's and a huge responsibility. Like you're, it's like you've always got to be the adults. And not show any cracks, and you know, that's a huge responsibility when you're carrying that weight of, you know, other people's personal things happening, things that you might, you know, I haven't really thought about that before, which is why these conversations are good, because it does, it raises that awareness.
Yeah. And it was interesting during COVID, like I felt like I had to be so like more stick to the rules than anybody else, just to, you know, just, if I didn't, you know, I've got to be sort of really squeaky clean. And you know, that was HR's moved on as well massively sort of from that time, from being the sort of font of all knowledge around isolation. So you'd get the briefing at like 7 o'clock at night from Boris, and then the next morning everybody would be saying, right, what do we do about this? And you think, I saw it the same time as you.
So you must have just been like, I always did think at that beginning bit, all the way through, because the rules kept changing, but like when we were furloughed at Bakkavor, and you know, there was hundreds, if not thousands, of people all furloughed on the same day, and you know, that constantly
changing,
just changing things constantly, and having to be the one that is the expert.
Yeah, that was.
I'm surprised there hasn't been more people leaving HR functions. Like, there has been, has there?
I think there has. I haven't got the stats in front of me, but there was some stuff around at the highest worldwide HR turnover was one of the highest departments. And I guess COVID probably had an impact on that, because I suppose, you know, think about the communication that was needed. How do you suddenly get people that are remote? You can't get everybody in a room. Remember, you know, we did a consultation during that period and did a video from the general manager to... she couldn't bring everybody in the canteen.
When we were furloughed, it was a video call of like 150 people all on the same call, and we knew something awful was about to happen.
Well, that's scary, isn't it, for everybody? Because it was a scary time anyway. It was like the world was ending, sort of thing, and it was all going crazy.
So a lot of HR people have been through a lot in the last few years, always are, but the last few years have been particularly difficult. So what, obviously you work with leaders in HR now to help them to sort of look after themselves better and stuff like that. So there will be HR people listening. What advice? Because they're probably sat there thinking, yeah, it is still actually that shit. You know, it is that difficult. What advice would you give those people?
So I think being conscious of this, of the confidentiality, and how do you make yourself visible when a lot of the work you're doing is confidential? Because, you know, you go to the SLT meetings and whatever, and people go around and say what you're doing, and some of what you're doing you can't share. So I think, which sometimes then might look like you're not contributing as much as everybody else, I think you have to actually do a bit more. And you know, I wasn't something I realized until probably later in my HR career, but you need to be prepared, you need to be thinking about what you've done, you need to think about what you can and can't share, so that when you see people or you're in meetings, you can actually share what you contribute without saying something that you shouldn't be sharing. So I think you have to do a bit more prep and think about profile. And I think we're bad at saying what we've done, what we contribute, and talking about success. And I think it goes back to sort of what you were saying around you just expect it to be there and granted, but you don't really, you know, we're not good at blowing our own trumpets. And I think
good at grafting and getting stuff done and standing in the sidelines, but and not actually taking the credit for it.
Yeah, so I think probably just thinking about how you celebrate your own team's success, I think that is something and that we probably need to do more as HR professionals. And developing yourself, I think keeping yourself current, it's moved on massively. I mean, I went to a CIPD event earlier in the year, and it was talking about AI and how that was moving on. And there was a lot of stuff around shift work and flexibility, because I think the food industry's probably struggled to keep up with some of the flexible working trends, because you can't work from home when you're on a factory production line, or you know, a lot of that stuff is not available in the same way. But there were businesses doing some really good stuff with hours and allowing people to pick their hours and using technology for that. So I think keeping yourself up to date and keeping ahead and looking at what other businesses are doing is really important. And having a network of people, because when you get a load of HR people together, you know, they will talk about that time in COVID and they're expecting to be an expert, and people, you know, people with shared experience and people that you can be honest with. I think having a network of HR people is really important. And it's,
yeah, and you've got better at that, haven't you, almost post being in that role? Because a lot of what you're talking about is you're having to take yourself out of the day-to-day hamster wheel to think about, isn't it?
Yeah.
But actually, because, and you do that now and have got a much better network. Because I think, particularly when you work in a business like the, you know, the big ones, because there is a bit of a network there, but it's an insular network that only sees the way things are done within that business.
Exactly.
It's quite easy to not realize that wealth of knowledge outside of the business. And it doesn't have to be, like, it doesn't matter if you work for competitors, you know, because you know how to keep things confidential. It's about sharing best practice, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think that is really valuable. I'm hoping to set up a bit of a local HR network to do that, because it's really interesting to hear what other people are doing. And, you know, if you're doing something good that's benefiting people in one business, we probably may as well all have at least a knowledge of it and a sight of it. So I think for your own well-being, but also understanding what's going on in the world, because stuff is moving fast. And I think especially with flexible work in the 4-day week, you know, just seen new flexible working rights will be coming through shortly. So I think, you know, that push isn't going to stop. So the food industry we're going to have to move with it, else we just won't have the talent. They'll go to the places. So I think, so I'd say definitely having a network. And I suppose it's so busy, you never think you can take 2 hours out. But actually, when you do take those 2 hours out and you think and you get new ideas and you speak to other people, you can come back and bring so much more.
Yeah.
I think not feeling bad about doing that. I was terrible. Oh, I'm too busy. I'm too this. It's a choice. And I think you can take stuff forward so much better if you take that bit of time and look after yourself. So I think looking after yourself, having a network, thinking around sort of the visibility, and I think also internal relationships in terms of pushing back and managing some of those things that I was talking about earlier in terms of the security and the Easter eggs and looking after the toilets and whatever's on the list. You know, if that's shared out fairly, and I have seen that done in businesses where it is shared out fairly and, you know, there isn't anyone to take it all, so everybody takes a bit, it's not so bad.
Yeah, but you've got to push back on it, haven't you? And we did that episode about it was the book review of the Saying No book. I can't remember what it's called now, but they call it non-promotable tasks in that book, don't they? Yeah. All the stuff that keeps the business running but actually doesn't get you any credit. And it all starts to weigh down on you and makes you feel underappreciated, I think, is probably the word, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, I definitely got to that point. But, and it's funny because you don't realize, because I think people do appreciate you. It's just, they don't necessarily.
But you're taken for granted. It's that you're just there. You're that really helpful department that does everything and, you know, is there when we need them. Oh, isn't that lovely? But I was also thinking the other episode that would be good for HR people to listen to is the one about owning your own achievements.
Yeah.
And I know this is also about the team, but it's like being able to, you know, talk about and acknowledge. Because the other things, I think that goes back to, if you're talking about your achievements, you might not think it's relevant for the rest of the business because it might not be something that's going to be happening anytime soon. But actually, it's still worth talking about and it's still valuable and it still needs to be highlighted.
Yeah. And I think it gives people hope and things to talk about with their teams. If they know it's coming, they can position stuff for you. But sometimes you can, you know, I've done the martyr thing and not, you know, not reach out and ask for help as well. Because I think because people go to HR for help, it, you know, occasionally somebody will say, how are you? And you think, oh, wow, that's lovely. And you really appreciate it. But, it, you know, I suppose people just, you're just there, aren't you? Just kind of.
Yeah. So I was going to ask about advice or what would you like to say to other the people in other functions? But it sounds like one of those things is ask HR if they're actually okay.
Yeah, and I think just remember their employees as well, because I think sometimes it's, oh, the company's not doing this or the company's doing that. But, you know, HR, I suppose, are employees as well. And I think that's the other time when network or outside support's really important, because if you are in HR and you get a bad boss, you're screwed. Because you've got no one, you haven't got, everybody else would go to HR and get some help with that, but you haven't got anywhere to go. And I think you've got no one to talk to about your own team as well. I mean, it's easy to tell. It's a bit like when looking at people's CVs. It's really easy to everyone else's, but doing your own is really hard to see. And I think it's the same with the HR teams. Sometimes you just need someone to bounce ideas off about the team, and you don't really feel you can ask anybody else because you're meant to have all the answers and know everything there is to know about managing people. And sometimes HR people aren't the best managers either.
Yeah. And that is where like coaching can come in as well, isn't it? Because what you're talking about, I have quite a lot of clients that are, I want you to tell us about what you do now. But I know it's quite similar to what I do, but some of my clients might be moving through a, you know, career transition or something like that. But I have got a few corporate clients that are heads of MPD and they just need somebody to have an hour or a couple of hours with a month to just talk about their team, talk about all the things. Because I think, and it'd be interesting to see if you think it's, it probably is the same. Because I was thinking, you know, like at that senior team level or the exec team level, there doesn't tend to be anybody else that gets MPD or gets HR because they've never worked in it. So you just don't have peers to talk things through that get it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely that. And I think, somebody to sort of, somebody that I work with, and she'll say, I just want to ask the crappy questions that I know I should know the answer to, but I don't. I want to be able to sort of say that in a safe place and talk stuff through. So I think it's definitely that. I think it's also, you get to a certain point in your career and you're like, I've been doing this quite a while. I've sort of been around the loop a few times. I don't know if I want to do, where do I go next? Or am I stuck here? Is this my lot for the next 20 years? If I don't want to go up, do I just have to sort of stay and suck it up? So I work with people who want to work through that. And I think it's what you were saying earlier, Lucy, in terms of you don't look outside, you don't look at what the options are. HR skills are massively transferable, but you don't always see it when you're there's lots of things you can do with those skills. And I think one of the other things that I work on a lot with people is helping them to see their own strengths and do something with those. So I think we tend to assume, you know, we're good at listening to people, we're good at helping and talking things through with people. We assume everybody is. But we know from
what don't realize it's a strength. You just don't realize the strengths, are they? Because they're so inherent in you.
Exactly. Yeah. So you think they're easy, so you don't think they're valuable. So I think helping people to see what they're good at and what their options are, because once you do start sort of looking out into the world, there's so many possibilities, but when your mind's closed to it, you don't see them. So I think that there's definitely something around a sounding board, somebody who gets it and understands what it's like to be in HR. Also working with people in HR who've been made redundant, because again, you feel like, I should be brilliant at LinkedIn, I should be brilliant at CVs, I should be brilliant at interviews. You're not always. You might be good at sitting on this side of the table, but it's very different when you're at the other side of the table, and sometimes you can feel quite exposed.
We did a webinar, didn't we, at the back end of last year between us on how to basically not lose your shit when you go through redundancy. So we'll put a link, because you can still get the replay of that. So I'll put a link in the show notes that people can watch that, because you had some really good exercises that you came up with for that to just help people process it or process the emotions of going through redundancy. Because like you say, like HR, you sort of think, oh, well, I'm you know, I deal with this stuff every day. I must be able to deal with, well, it's very different when you're on the, it's happening to you.
Really different. Yeah. And, you know, like I said earlier, your confidence. And I think that is a really important thing that people come for as well. Sometimes you can just find your confidence has a wobble and you don't really know why. It might be a bad role, bad boss, or just been there too long. All those things can sort of add up and knock your confidence, and you just need to remind yourself and get some of that back. And that people, you need help with that. We don't know how to do all of those things. And I think, yeah, that's sort of the main things, and supporting HR teams as well in terms of, you know, how do they build relationships? How do they do networking? How do you get visible? It's not the sort of stuff you learn on CIPD. So I think it's just helping with those sort of things to, because we just, you know, they're not innate, they are learned skills.
So I know there's going to be loads of HR people like, I've got to get in touch with Jenny now and get some coaching in, or get her in to talk to the team. So what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
So probably LinkedIn is probably the best way. Just send me a message on LinkedIn or send me an email. My email's on there, and my email's freedomhrandcoaching@btinternet.com. And that was sort of named because that was my driver really for being self-employed, was around that freedom and that flexibility. So that's sort of
where we haven't really talked about that. So you took the leap and that's what it was about for you, was it? Just similar to me really in terms of wanting to be your own boss.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Doing the bits that, and that's exactly what you're talking about that you do with your own clients, is recognizing what your strengths are and actually what, you know, you didn't want to be doing the same thing for 20 years, the next 20 years. So doing something different. Yeah. It is scary. Like, I remember the first call we had and you were like, oh my God, like, and can I possibly do this? And then all of a sudden you popped up and I was like, oh my God, she's done it. She's done it. but you have to take those leaps of faith in life, don't you?
Yeah.
If you want things to be different.
Yeah, absolutely. But having somebody with you and sort of helping you along, like, you know, as you've done for me, it's really important, having sort of getting those support networks in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, and I had a coach when I took the leap. I had a redundancy, you know, an outplacement coach, and then had mentors to help me with everything. So absolutely, neither of us would be where we are without having got support. So I think for all those HR people out there listening, thinking, oh, well, I should be able to do it all myself. We didn't do it ourselves either. No, so, you know, you've got to go and get some support.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you so much for joining us today, Jenny. It's been an amazing chat. And I think you will have really, for HR people listening, they will feel seen, which is great.
Yeah.
But I also think for people in other departments, I think stop taking HR as much for granted as they have been.
Yeah, go and see HR and see if they're all right.
Yeah. Take chocolate.
Thank you so much, Jenny. Really nice to meet you.
You too. Thank you.
And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us today, and we hope that this has been useful to you. As ever, we would love it if you could rate and review the podcast on your podcast app. It really does help us reach and support more foodies out there.
We'd also love it if you'd come and join us in the Facebook group, the O for Food's Sake community. And if you want to get in touch with us personally, Lucy is available for consultancy advice and training and can be found on LinkedIn as Lucy Wager.
And if you want to reach out to Amy for any one-to-one coaching, group facilitation or training, then contact her on LinkedIn at Amy Wilkinson Coach. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
See you next time. This podcast is sponsored by Damer Ingredients, who provide best-in-class functional ingredients such as starches, proteins, fibres and gums, to name but a few, into food manufacturers across the UK and Ireland.
I've worked with Damer on various projects for my own brand and with my clients. And what I love about working with them is their in-depth technical knowledge and their ability to apply that to the specific products that you're actually working on.
So they've become an extension to your own development team, supporting them with their knowledge from concept through to launch. To find out more, visit www.dama.com.